Okay, so today I'd like to take up the section immediately following the forgetting the self paragraph. It reads like this. When a person starts to search out the Dharma, she separates herself far from the Dharma. When the Dharma has already been rightly transmitted in oneself, just then one is one's original self. If a person, when she is riding along in a boat, looks around and sees the shore, she mistakenly thinks the bank is moving. But if he looks directly at the boat, he discovers that it is the boat that is moving along. Likewise, with confused thoughts about body and mind, holding to discrimination of the myriad dharmas, one mistakenly thinks his mind and nature are permanent. If, intimately engaged in daily activities, one returns to right here, the principle that the myriad dharmas have no self is clear. So again, and this happened the section before this, the one before forgetting the self, the first two sentences are rather straightforward. When a person starts to search out the Dharma, she separates herself far from the Dharma. When the Dharma has already been rightly transmitted in oneself, just then one is one's original self. Because you are not separate from the Dharma, because the Dharma is a seamless whole, to search, and especially to search outside yourself, immediately creates a disconnection. However, this searching seems to be one of the woven threads that makes us human. This searching is not unique to we moderns. All cultures seem to have tales of a long journey searching for gold, or diamonds, or the opposite sex, or the soul, whatever was valued in that culture. The searcher, hero, or adventurer goes through all types of travails, and after many miles and years, returns to where she started from, and finds what has always been present. The young Zhao Zhou's journey was shortened because in meeting his first teacher, he immediately asked, "What is the Tao?" Nan Chuan said, "Ordinary mind is the Tao." Clearly, if it is ordinary, no running about and searching is necessary. He is saying, just open your eyes, just taste with your tongue. Just to make sure of this point, Zhao Zhou followed up with, "Should I try to direct myself toward it?" Zhao Zhou still thinks it is outside, and he insists, since he is human, on searching for it. Nan Chuan said, "If you try to direct yourself, if you try to search for it, you betray your own practice." Nan Chuan is not saying you do not have to practice, but he is insisting that our sense of practice has to be reimagined. When you practice Zazen, you are not an object. Mu is not an object. Breath counting is not an object. There is no object, and in fact, there is no activity. There is only, as Dogen says in his Fukan Zazenji, there is only sitting at the gate of ease and joy. There is only sitting, allowing each thing to come forward and confirm you. As you become porous and your edges more diffuse, the Venus star takes your seat. Kuan Yin comes down from the altar and puts on your shirt. The sound of the bell fills your seat. Then, just then, one is one's original self, containing and contained, multidimensional, multi-centered. Dogen next wrote, if a person, when she is riding along in a boat, looks around, wait a second, while I look around, when she looks around and sees a shore, she mistakenly thinks the bank is moving. But if he looks directly at the boat, he discovers that it is a boat that is moving along. Likewise, with confused thoughts about body and mind, holding to discrimination of the myriad dharmas, one mistakenly thinks his own mind and nature are permanent. It may be that in the prime of our physical lives, say in our late teens or 20s, and into our earlier mid-30s, we may think that the shore is moving, but the boat, the body, strong, dependable, and stable. However, that myth is easily seen through if your glasses are handy as we age. It is clear in our 50s and 60s that the boat is thinning. It is clear that it has sprung leaks and the holes are widening each year. The boat creaks and cracks and twists, and the water it sits in, life, intrudes, and we are more easily unmoored by wind, cold, rain, and waves. If we ever did, now at this age, we rarely think the body is permanent and solid. However, we may still think there is something or someone which exists throughout our lives. We can remember experiences from our youth and through the arc of our lives. There is a narrator who seems always to be present, and we wonder if that person, that sound, that narration, is the pilot of the boat. But with Zazen, we see ourselves take so many positions and tell so many stories that we begin to see through that myth of a solid, dependable narrator or self. But then there is another, even more subtle story that we adhere to, especially we educated postmodern Americans. We say there is no thing permanent or abiding. Many of us have fallen away from or seen through the Judeo-Christian monotheistic myth, and we are not depending or planning on heaven or on 33 Vestal Virgins. We have been raised with an awareness of processes and can intellectually see ourselves as simply that. I have heard folks say, life is a process and death only a part of that process. And though this may be true, there is sometimes a lack of emotional truth or integrity when this statement is made. It is coming too much from the head. This is the beauty of Zazen. If we sit with honesty and integrity, we can't get away with such statements like there is no thing permanent or abiding. For who is making them? And who is nodding in agreement? or disagreement. When you become quiet in Zazen, who is here? Remember, even the witness that softly reports of pure awareness, or just presence, or just this, is a vestige of ego. That quietest of voices, the almost silent voice which is called the wise one in some traditions, or the spirit in others, is usually the whisperings of ego. The one who makes deep psychological statements of insight, or discerns spiritual nuances too, is often the ego directing and inserting itself. Be careful. Be aware and return to your breath. Return to counting. Return to mu. You do not have to cut off the whisperings any more than you have to cut off the whisperings of bare tree branches in a cold winter wind. Those are simply the conditions of your Zazen. Just like the valleys, mountains, and creek crossings are the conditions a backpacker finds herself in, there is no need to grasp at phenomena and no need to push them away. Let them do what they do. Whisper. 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 And at some point they will stop. And at some point they will continue. In another fascicule from the Shobo Genzo titled Zenki, or Total Manifest Function, Dogen writes, life is, for example, similar to a person riding in a boat. In this boat, I use the sails. I am at the helm, and I pull the boat. Although I operate the boat is carrying me, and there is no I other than the boat. I am on the boat, and I make the boat into the boat. We should inquire and study this very moment. At this very moment, there is nothing other than the world of the boat. The sky, the water, and the coast all become the circumstances of the boat. This is not the same as the time of not riding in the boat. Therefore, I give birth to life. Life makes me into me. When we are riding in a boat, our body and mind, self and environment, are all essential parts of the boat. The whole great earth and the whole of empty space are essential parts of the boat. I as life, and life as I, are thus. When our thoughts are confused, which means when we believe in an independent, substantial, and permanent self or soul, we may know things change, but we doubt that we do. However, in Zazen, as we continually see the rising and falling of sounds and smells, in Zazen, as we continually see and feel sadness and happiness, when we continually feel tightness and relaxation, contraction and expansion, we experience all life as me, and me as all life. There is no separation. What occurs inside occurs outside, and what occurs outside, inside. When we stand, the world stands. And when the world sits, we sit. We soon recognize in Zazen that my body is the body of the world. And then we don't worry quite so much. We know that things move together, and this moving together has no beginning, no middle, and no ending. This does not mean that we don't feel confused and lost at times. This does not mean that we don't feel sadness and grief-stricken, or unhappy and afraid at times. It just means that sometimes there are bright clouds. It just means that sometimes there are somber clouds. Sometimes we sit, and sometimes we stand. Sometimes we cry, and sometimes we laugh. Sometimes we pick and choose, and sometimes we don't. Actually, to say we experience all life as me and me as all life isn't accurate. That statement is too general. It is more accurate and true to say, as Dogen does, that when intimately engaged in daily activities, one returns to right here. And the principle that the myriad dharmas have no self is clear. If intimately engaged in daily activities, again, not in general, but specifically, when intimately engaged in sweeping, in bowing, in shoveling snow, in chanting, we return to right here. We come home to the place that we actually never left. When intimately engaged, the boundaries drop away. We drop away. And it is clear that each has no separate self. And so, we're able to fall in love again for the first time. We fall in love with ourselves for all we are and for all we never can be. We fall in love with our troubles, our travails, and our suffering. And we fall in love with the world for all its terrible beauty and heartbreak. We fall in love for all its life and death, for all its sunrises and sunsets, and for all its hope and hopelessness. Again and again we fall in love for the first time. If intimately engaged, that's it. And there isn't much more that need be said when intimately engaged. I am reminded of a poem, a stanza from a poem, called My Field Guide. It is written by the poet Erin Ballou. And she says, I've never bothered with the names of flowers, though now I'd like this expertise to call them out to you as we hike in. But I would want their true names, not the guides all classifying explanations. And then the poem goes on and names some of those all classifying explanations. And she says further down in the poem, I'd want their true names. I'd have the words that droning bee has just now written at the throat of lakeside goldenrod. The bee is intimately engaged, the goldenrod intimately engaged, the poet similarly engaged. She knows the name of the flower, but she does not let this hold her back from experiencing in a different way, a more subtle way, a more engaged way. She is participating in the unfolding life and not being stuck to shore or boat, to body or soul. She is willing to know and then let go of that knowing, using it as an entranceway to that which is always right before us. The knowing is not a problem. The knowing is not a block. It is the entranceway. It is the invitation to now see and hear more clearly. It is a starting point to step into what we can never know, but that we can always love again and again and again for the very first time. Okay, so thank you. I'll stop there and then we have time for questions and answers, or actually questions and responses.